The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Demi Arsenault from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the spring 2020 issue of Lion Magazine. And we're going to jump right in today with our Global Service Department, beginning right here in the United States, an article titled Taking Care of the Earth. As the world honors the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, the environmentally conscious Lions of Bowie, Maryland, have their own big numbers to celebrate. The Lions will hit the 500 mark on rain barrel sales this spring, having sold the recycled plastic 55-gallon barrels since starting the project in 2010. And on April 18th, they will sponsor the 10th annual Bowie Green Expo, one town and one club's way of showing people how important it is to be green and how easy it can be to lead a greener life. Taschenberger says the one-day expo drew more than 600 people in 2019, and a bigger crowd is expected this year. Along with 50 vendors with environmentally friendly products, the expo will offer information on tree trimming, solar power, electric cars, and architectural recycling. A kids' zone will teach youngsters about endangered species, hatching monarch butterflies, and pollinators. The City Garden Club will sell native plants, and the Maryland Forestry Division will offer 5- and 6-year-old native trees for adoption. It's important for the environment, and it's important that people know how to take care of the earth, says Taschenberger. People don't know, and that's why they're coming to the expo. The 35-member club has made its name in the making and selling of 40 to 50 75 U.S. dollar rain barrels each spring and summer at the Bowie Farmers Market and special events. The plastic barrels were formerly used for food products. Rain barrels help reduce water pollution by decreasing the amount of stormwater runoff reaching our streams and rivers. They also lower water usage and help decrease water bills. It is estimated that an average rainfall of 1 inch within a 24-hour period can produce more than 700 gallons of water running off a typical house. The barrels capture that water from the roof and hold it for later use such as on lawns, gardens, or indoor plants. Berger says the city's support is important in making the Lions' efforts succeed. Without them, we would not be able to do what we do. He also knows that the city appreciates the help they receive from the Lions Club. Lions assist the city as weed warriors, working alongside members of the city's green team to stop the assault on the forest by non-native invasive English ivy vine. Volunteers meet in the fall and the spring to remove English ivy from the trees. Each year, they also help the city with stream cleaning, removing trash from the Patuxent River, a tributary of the Chesapeake Bay. For the first couple years, they pulled tires, car batteries, shopping carts, and fencing from the water. Now we don't get nearly as much, says Taschenberger, and that's good. And next we'll move over to Cambodia with Mission Inclusion. Lions in Cambodia believe it's not about winning or losing, but how and with whom you play the game. The organizers of the OSEAL LEO Forum 2020 teamed up with Special Olympics Asia Pacific, also known as SOAP, and Special Olympics Cambodia to organize an afternoon of Special Olympics Unified Sports, which places individuals with intellectual disabilities on teams with those without disabilities. Part of the purpose of the forum was to raise awareness of Special Olympics and its partnership with Lions. Unified Sports is the philosophy that teaming individuals with intellectual disabilities with those without intellectual disabilities is a path to friendship and understanding, so it felt natural to put those principles into practice at the forum. We at the Special Olympics are incredibly grateful for these opportunities to empower our athletes to achieve their best, both on and off the field of play, says President and Managing Director of Special Olympics Europe Eurasia, David Evangelista, as a Lion. 120 Leos and Lions and 30 Special Olympics athletes from the Cambodia province of Kampong Thom came together at Angkor Beer Football Club to compete in a five-a-side football, or soccer, and the traditional sport of tug-of-war, which are both popular national sports for Cambodia. In 2015, tug-of-war was recognized for its cultural significance in Cambodia, as well as in South Korea, Vietnam, and the Philippines, and placed on the UN Cultural Heritage List. Incorporating the game into the forum helped participants to better understand the local culture. There were four unified teams for football, each comprised of 5 to 6 Leos or Lions, and 3 Special Olympics athletes. And there were 8 tug-of-war teams, each with 8 to 9 Leos or Lions, and 2 to 3 athletes. The rest of the forum participants who were not playing helped document the event through photography and videography. For some Leos, this was their first time playing tug-of-war. For some Special Olympic athletes, this was their first experience traveling to another province for sports. Before the event, Lions and Leos provided shoes, sports uniforms, and footballs for the athletes to train with. The partnership enabled participants to learn the ethos of the Special Olympics movement while also having hands-on experience of how unified sports activities can bring about inclusion through sports. And overall, everyone had a lot of fun. Back to the United States, Lions solve a food scarcity problem. When the only grocery store for miles closed in the small town of Tyonesta, Pennsylvania, residents found themselves in a food desert. It seems hard to believe on the banks of the Allegheny River, along the lush Allegheny National Forest, but getting healthy food meant driving to towns 30 to 45 minutes away on hilly two-lane roads where wintry weather can only make things worse. Tyonesta, population of about 500, includes many elderly individuals who could not safely drive to the other towns. Although they could find a few items at the local Dollar General store, they had no way to get healthy foods like fresh fruits and vegetables when the grocery store closed. Now, thanks to the Tyonesta Lions, their groceries are brought to them. Tyonesta Lion Farley Wright, wanting to do something for his community, met with people from the Giant Eagle supermarket chain that owns stores in Pennsylvania, and he met with his club. Townspeople were hungry for a solution. Lions were eager to help. By working hand-in-hand with the Tyonesta Lions, Giant Eagle leadership began a pilot program called Curbside Express that now allows residents to get fresh groceries delivered to their town on Tuesday and Saturday mornings each week. Online shoppers choose their items on the Giant Eagle website and pay online. Those without a home computer get help at the public library. Personal shoppers fill the orders at the store in Meadville, about 45 minutes away, and load them into a van. In Tyonesta, a group of Lions are waiting for them at the Industrial Development Corporation, ready to unload the van and assist customers to get their groceries. District Governor and Tyonesta Lion Bernadette Holzer says it's a service project that the club is happy to be able to do. Some shoppers were concerned that there would be a problem about getting good produce and other perishables, says Holzer. But the opposite has proven to be true. The ice cream arrives frozen, the produce is the best, and the meats are fresh, she says. People are very thankful, says Holzer, thankful that they no longer have to make the drive for groceries, and thankful for the Lions who have supported our community in their need. Next, I want to share an article on Potawatomi Wildlife Park. Visitors find peace in this refuge for endangered plants and animals. At the Potawatomi Wildlife Park, a small not-for-profit natural sanctuary for plants and animals in northern Indiana, the bells and whistles of a larger park are gladly traded for the peace and serenity of nature. From the woodlands, wetlands, ponds, and prairie, visitors might spot a deer, small animals like the river otter, or a box turtle, as well as summer wildflowers and birds of all kinds, including osprey and bald eagles. But what is more obscure is the largest population of the federally endangered clubshell mussel, imperiled by habitat destruction, but at home in this stretch of the Tippecanoe River, one of the nation's most biologically diverse rivers that borders the park. What this park has to offer is a chance for people to see nature in a variety of forms, says Mike Steffen, executive director and the only park employee. It's important for us to offer a nice diversity where we can educate the kids about nature and about the history of the area. People don't come here to see other people. They come out to be in nature. Originally the home of the Potawatomi tribe, the 317-acre park was developed in the late 1970s and early 80s on 151 acres of farmland, left at the bequest of a local farmer who envisioned a place just like this. Representatives from three Indiana Lions clubs, the Etna Green Lions, the Bourbon Lions, and the Mentone Lions, with two Kiwanis clubs, formed the board that owns and manages the foundation's not-for-profit park. Over the years, the park has grown as more land has been donated, gazebos have been built, a historic cabin has been reconstructed, and trails added. As an extra charm, Potawatomi Wildlife Park is far enough away from the city lights and street lights to eliminate light pollution, and a concentrated effort has been made to keep park lighting to a minimum to create an observing area for celestial sights that is 100% free of all outside lighting. The park is recognized and managed as Indiana's first, quote, dark sky preserve, frequented by astronomical societies, schools, and individuals hoping to see another natural wonder. And next, we have one of our feature articles, From Beneficiary to Benefactor. The thing is, serving isn't only about doing something for your community. When a club is truly respected and well-known, the community can't help but give back. There's no place like home when Granville Lions in New York learned that the community's food pantry was running out of space in the basement of a church where they had been for 30 years, so they chose to help. They did the same for the pantry as they had done before for the Granville Senior Citizen Center years before. They bought them a permanent home. The club of about 35 members in the town of 7,000 also heard that the small former church building was for sale. After 2 years of negotiations with the Catholic diocese, the club wrote a check for $52,000 to purchase All Saints Hall. Then it transferred it to the food pantry. Granville Area Food Pantry and Community Service is now just two doors from the senior center in another former church. Since chartering in 1960, the Granville Lions Club has contributed more than $1.5 million to the local community. Lion Ron Barrett, a Granville Lion since 1970, says that while the work of Lions has benefited their community, it's helped Lions like him as well. I've gotten a lot out of it too, says Barrett, who originated the pantry project. It makes you feel good. Over the years, the club has helped form the Grandview Rescue Squad, supported by the Library Capital Fund, given out $75,000 in high school scholarships, provided $20,000 for the fire department's thermal imaging camera, backed various Little League projects, spent more than $100,000 on hearing and eye needs of residents, and donated $70,000 to the Lions Eye Institute in Albany, New York. The club is able to do all this by way of its unique fundraiser, buying and reselling closeout and overstocked patio furniture. In the 1960s, Robert Vandermeiden, the head of the family-owned company Telescope Casual Furniture in Granville, joined Lions and set up the annual sale. Since then, Granville Lions have been buying the closeouts and overstocked items from Telescope and selling them from Lion-owned warehouses on Lion Lane. On weekends from May through August, the club divides into five teams who take turns running the weekend business, and Barrett says shoppers come from as far as 70 miles away to buy from them. It's this kind of work that allows Lions to do what they do, and that's appreciated, says the Reverend Jerry McKinney, president of the pantry board. He hopes this latest effort by Lions increases awareness of what Lions contribute to their community. Barrett, who is 79, hopes more young people will get involved in the club. Lions are all about paying it forward. But in Monroe, Connecticut, one couple and one Lions Club have uniquely extended their pay-it-forward generosity to their community for years to come. Lion Len Berger, a club member for 51 years, tells the story of how years ago the Monroe Lions planned their evening meetings at a local restaurant where the owner required them to guarantee a minimum number of meals. What on the day before each meeting, he wanted to know how many would be in attendance. If the number of Lions coming fell short of the guarantee, they would contact the social director for their town to invite community members, often seniors, to join them. The Lions guests were told they were welcome to stay for the meeting, but they certainly weren't required to. Among those who came several times were Charles and Lillian Wilton, who would enjoy dinner and the meeting, then thank the Lions before they went home. Years passed and things changed, including the Lions or the club's meeting spot. Then one day in 2012, the Monroe Lions were called to probate court. The club was named as a beneficiary in the estate of Lillian Wilton. Charles Wilton had died in 2008 and left his estate to care for his wife. Charlie and Lil, married 63 years, had no children, and when Lillian died, 80% of the Wiltons' more than $3 million U.S. dollar estate was left to be divided by seven not-for-profits in Monroe, including the Lions. The other 20% went to extended family members. The Monroe Lions were taken aback. No one would describe the couple's lifestyle as extravagant, but apparently they had also inherited money, and they chose to pay it forward. The club formed a 501c3, Monroe Lions Charities Incorporated, and invested the funds. Since then, the charity has annually distributed approximately 5% of the portfolio's income and growth to other organizations and agencies, including Boy and Girl Scouts, Lions Low Vision Centers of Fairfield and New Haven Counties, and Monroe Volunteer Emergency Medical Services, as well as LCIF. In 2019, the Lions took an even bigger step, donating $93,000 to the Friends of the Edith Wheeler Memorial Library, providing half the funds needed for a renovation of the library's upper level. It now includes the Monroe Lions Club Co-op and Cafe with coffee and comfy chairs, a team space, and a maker space. The community is thrilled. It's a win-win, says Berger. It's a win for the town, and it's an extremely positive representation of the Lions. What it does not mean is that the Monroe Lions sit back and rely on their inheritance. By using this investment strategy, we hope to be able to provide financial support for many years, says Berger. But the club and the charity are separate entities. The club still has pancake breakfast and a variety of activities and fundraisers. With a budget of $8,000 to $12,000 U.S. dollars a year, the Monroe Lions Club supports the food pantry, funds scholarships, decorates town hall for the holidays, and more. And next, another feature article, The Bird Artist, Looking Out for America's Wetlands. In early spring, sometimes as early as the first cold mornings of March, Jeff Kleinfelter will rouse before daybreak and drive out to his pond to get in place before the migrating ducks or other birds light on the water or the woodland edge. Squeezed into his homemade 4x4x4 foot duck blind, he'll sit in silence, sometimes 4 or more hours, watching, waiting, and looking for a good shot. He takes notes of the bird's colors and plumage, as well as how they act and react when they arrive to the open water. When the perfect one comes along, he focuses in and, snap, he takes a picture. I don't know why anyone would want to shoot a duck, he says. They're beautiful. He isn't there to hunt wildlife, though his work is often featured on the stamps that hunters purchase for the right to shoot. What he is looking for during those long mornings in his duck blind are the tiny details that make each bird unique. The photos will become references for future paintings, or sometimes just records for future reminiscing. Kleinfelter, an Etna Green Lion from Indiana, has made a national name for himself in the wildlife art community, winning multiple top honors in migratory bird stamp competitions, commonly called duck stamp contests, in about 18 states. Locally, he is known as a quiet conservationist, a man to count on when work needs to be done. He loved two things as a child, the outdoors and art, and began drawing when he was just old enough to hold a pencil, he says. Now, at 68, living in the same sturdy bungalow where he was raised, he describes himself as a semi-retired. He clarifies, that means he is cutting back on the work that takes time away from his art. I'll never retire from painting, Kleinfelter says, not as long as I can hold a brush in this hand. The artist's tools, pencils and brushes that fill a coffee cup next to his easel, have been his lifelong companions. But the inspiration for his work can't be so neatly contained. It's not riches or fame, but nature. And all you have to do is go outside and pay attention, he says. It's unbelievable if a person goes out and sees what's there. In the quiet of the small studio he built in his backyard, Kleinfelter's work comes alive. On average, he will spend 5 or 6 hours a day for 3 weeks in virtual solitude there, painting a duck or a waterfowl picture, and even an occasional trout for a contest like the rainbow trout that won him first place in a Delaware stamp competition. Coming up with the design, starting with a thumbnail sketch, can take as long as the painting itself. He says it's just as important. Kleinfelter graduated from Indiana University's Heron School of Art and Design in 1974, but knew that, quote, being a freelance artist is pretty financially risky, unquote. He went back home to work with his father in their mowing business, and although he got to be outside, his artwork became secondary. One day he read in a wildlife magazine about the federal duck stamp contest. He began entering the Indiana State Competition, and in 1988 won his first top prize for his painting of a bobwhite quail that had been one of his mother's favorites. That's when the dam broke. A steady stream of award-winning paintings followed nationwide. Oh, but there are plenty of contests I didn't win, he says. But I never gave up. I just kept trying. In both Louisiana and California, Kleinfelter has earned 3 first-place ribbons, the most recent being in the 2020 California Upland Game Bird Stamp Contest for his painting of a ruffled grouse. It was his 3rd consecutive year to win California's top prize, and judges praised his competition and fine detail, noting the accuracy of the feathers. Winning takes more than a pretty picture, says Larry Reynolds, a Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries manager. When you get right down to it, the single most important thing is that the body composition, the colors, the posture, and the habitat is accurate. It has to be as realistic as it can be. Since 1934, when President Herbert Hoover signed the Migratory Bird Hunting Stamp Act, known as the Duck Stamp Act, hunters have been required to buy a federal duck stamp before hunting waterfowl. States also required their own stamps for hunting, but in recent years, some states have gone the way of electronic licenses, and some have stopped the duck stamps entirely. States like California use an automated license data system, but still produce the stamps for collectors as well as hunters and conservationists who want to support habitat. California Fish and Wildlife estimates about 17,000 stamps, including Kleinfelter's 2020 winner, will be distributed. Kleinfelter likes that the sale of the stamps helps conservation efforts. 98% of the proceeds from each $25 federal duck stamp goes to the Migratory Bird Conservation Fund for the acquisition of wetlands as waterfowl habitat. These wetlands act as sponges in nature and are home to more than 1/3 of the threatened and endangered species in the U.S. Many species of birds and mammals depend on them for food and shelter, especially during migration and breeding, and for all of us they enhance water quality, helping control flooding and erosion. Although he has not won this prestigious federal contest that draws around 150 artist entries each year, Kleinfelter has placed among the top 10. I'll keep trying until I can't do it anymore, he says. He is a member of organizations like the Nature Conservancy and a non-hunting member of Ducks Unlimited because he likes their magazine and knows that taking care of the environment goes beyond enjoying the beauty of it. You can't have one without the other. But the inspiration for his work can't be so neatly contained. It's not riches or fame, but nature. And all you have to do is go outside and pay attention, he says. It's unbelievable if a person goes out and sees what's there. On a Saturday morning, or maybe two this spring, he'll be picking up trash along the country road with his fellow Etna Green Lions. He is president of the small but active club for the third time in his 25 Lion years and is involved in all their projects, from the kids' Easter egg hunt to their work at the county fair. Just 7 miles from his home, visitors to the nonprofit Potawatomi Wildlife Park, a 317-acre complex of fields, woodlands, ponds, and wetlands bordered by the Tippecanoe River, might also see Kleinfelter chopping firewood, measuring fish for a kid's fishing derby, or working on the historic log cabin. He is president of the Park Foundation and a working board member. Jeff's been here a long time, and he is key to a lot of things getting done at the park, says Mike Steffen, Potawatomi's executive director. He's a highly valued member of the board. He certainly exhibits that lion service attitude. Even if he isn't working at the park, Kleinfelter may be there watching birds and critters along the trails. It's a life of few commercial distractions that he has chosen. "I'm a small town this and that," he says. He has no computer and no interest in owning one, relying on friends at the Bourbon Library to download required contest information. And while he has a cell phone, he prefers to have it turned off sometimes. Life is full enough with lion meetings and events, his volunteer work at the park, his involvement at the Etna Green United Methodist Church, summertime mowing for a little extra cash, and meeting contest deadlines like the upcoming one for the 2021 Wyoming Conservation Stamp Art Contest. He's painting an osprey. Eventually, says Kleinfelter, he would like to paint fewer birds and more landscapes, like the peaceful one that hangs above his mantle. Maybe he'll even try some abstract art, an escape from the accurate detail that painting waterfowl requires. But at the moment, it's a habit, he says, laughing. I can't break it. I guess I'm addicted to ducks. And we have a little time left for some club news, beginning with the Phoenix Metro Lions in Arizona, who participated in Arizona's Service Rally Day with their Pathways to Reading project. They have provided more than 80,000 books to underserved children through this major project. At Mountain View School, they gave out 650 books free to children from pre-K through third grade. Tim Pascarelli, a lion in Arizona, represented the Golden Lions with a holiday bell ringing while vacationing and visiting family in Colorado. And finally, in New Jersey, the Stafford Township Lions and the Southern Regional Leo Club provided $100 worth of pajamas for the National Pajama Program. And now, unfortunately, we've run out of time for today's episode of Lion Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Demi Arsenault for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the print and visually impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And again, that's ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. And again, that phone number is 919-832-5138. And I hope you have a wonderful day.